Stop all that girl tripping. That's I'm gonna ask her too. Because she, but I don't think, yeah.
And I ain't stopping my girl trips. Y'all just want to know how to act.
Yeah, I'm going to have to talk to the sister I'm bringing on because she better not be all girl trip. Well, she be all over the planet, though, but she be putting in work. She's working, though. She's not just girl tripping. She's working.
Girl tripping.
Yeah, stop girl tripping.
That's like, I like it, though.
Yeah, girl tripping.
Like
stop
it.
Girl tripping.
Yeah,
for
like
real,
it.
For real. All right, there you have it. So, ladies and gentlemen, she said it feel like it. So, next up is someone with whom I have a tremendous amount of respect for, classy lady. Who do we have today? Who do we have today?
Today we have Khadida Kenner, is the chief executive officer of the New Pennsylvania Project, a voting rights organization modeled after the successful New Georgia Project founded by Stacey Abrams in 2014. The New Pennsylvania Project primary focus to civically engage, register, mobilize, and empower. Let's give a warm We Talk Weekly welcome to Khadida Kenner. All right.
Khadida, how can you hear us?
I can. Good evening. How are y'all doing?
Excellent, excellent. So how have you been?
I've been good. I've been busy. I just joined the last few minutes of this call and girl tripping. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to ask you, what's going on with this girl tripping? Y'all got to stop girl tripping.
I'm a grown woman, so I don't girl trip.
I know that's right. That's what's up. So you joined the last minute. How do you feel about, you know, that has been all over the news, you know, this sister who was brutally beaten by her friends that she, you know, felt comfortable enough to go across the world with pretty much. What are your feelings on, you know, this whole situation and like, how do you think this could have even been prevented, you know?
Yeah, it's really sad. And obviously they weren't her friends.
Yeah.
It's just really sad. I mean, I feel like people nowadays do everything for the gram. They do everything to, you know, get a video of something and to see that was being recorded by supposedly her friends as it was going down. It's a sad situation all around. And I can't say anything else about it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So just to jump into you, you've been so busy. You've been doing a lot of work, man. And I'm so excited to see your progress. I'm excited to see a lot of the things that you have been doing. And you're still keeping up the good fight. You're a friend of the show, so you've been here a couple times. But what empowers you to continue to build and push and to create that kind of sustainable motion to say that we're going to fight for the people, we're going to fight to get the right people there as representative in leadership, you know?
Everything I do to honor my ancestors. I know that I am living their most wildest dream at this moment. And so the struggle continues for civil rights, for voting rights, for human rights here in America and across the country. And all the work that I do to honor my ancestors, to honor my parents who, you know, are still with us here, thank God. And this is what keeps me going, knowing that there is something to fight for. A shout out to Black women. Black women continue to defend democracy in this country, even when democracy doesn't seem to always love us.
That's right.
And, you know, give a Black woman organizer a shout out.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Hold up. This is what I'm going to do right now. You know, because, you know, I'm giving you a shout out, giving this sister a shout out. You know, I love you, though. So, you know, this is something I do every day for you. So I appreciate you. And, you know, we're here to support the work that you do and whatever you feel like we can do to support you and give you platform and whatever that you believe that we can do to help amplify your initiative. Let us know, because we're here with you 100%. And I'm saying that for the record, for the sister right here, you know. So that said, I got a quick question. Have you ever thought about you running or taking some type of political office?
I get that sometimes. I have no interest in running for political office. I have no interest in that type of service. I can be a public servant in other ways, and running for office just isn't my thing. I'd rather be able to work on legislation and policy behind the scenes and lobby and use whatever, you know, platform I have to encourage the current legislators and those willing to run for office to do what they need to do to honor their commitments to the voters. So no, I have no interest in myself in running for political office, and in no shape, way, or form.
That's crazy, because you just really give me, like, with your hard work, your advocacy, even your voice also, you give me that Kamala Harris vibe. Like, I'm like, oh, she would just be so, you know, awesome. For those who are listening, could you basically tell us a little bit about New Pennsylvania Project, and tell us about that moment that you knew that the New PA Project was something that Pennsylvania definitely needed?
Yeah, New Pennsylvania Project, we're only a year and a half old. We were founded in May of 2021, and we're named in honor of the New Georgia Project and the work of Stacey Abrams and Nseu Fott, Kendra Cotton, the current CEO of the New Georgia Project, and all the work they were able to, all the work they were able to do in Georgia. I mean, they have a 95% voter registration rate in Georgia right now, and that took some time. The New Georgia Project started in 2014, and they didn't start to truly see the huge success that we've seen out of Georgia until 2020, so it takes some time. And so the New Pennsylvania Project was formed in order to expand the electorate in Pennsylvania. There are 1.7 million Pennsylvanians who are eligible to vote but choose not to. Either they have never been registered to vote, or maybe they were registered to vote back in 2008 and cast a ballot for the first Black president and never did it again. So there is a lot of work to be done. And these numbers, you know, are even more, a lot greater even in communities of color. We center communities of color. There are 20% of Black folks in Pennsylvania who are eligible to vote and not registered. 31% of the Latino community eligible to vote and not registered. 42% of the Asian Pacific Islander community eligible to vote and not registered. So the New Pennsylvania Project, we center communities of color, we center immigrant communities, and we center the youth. And the youth is where it is in this moment, because as it stands right now in Pennsylvania, only 1 in 4 high school student who is eligible to vote is actually registered. 25% of high school students registered to vote. So we have lots of work to do to get the youth engaged, to get the immigrant community engaged, and to get communities of color engaged. Pennsylvania is about 27% folks of color. And so no Democrat is going to win a statewide election without the Black vote, without the Latino vote. And so it's really important that we get everybody who is eligible to vote, get them registered to vote, and give them a reason to come out to the polls. And I knew early on that this was going to be a success, because these are communities who are just not engaged, and they have been disenfranchised functionally and politically. They don't have elected officials knocking on their doors. They don't have, lots of time trust in the political system, because the political system, for many folks, it should not be trusted the way it has worked in previous years and throughout history, particularly for Black folks. So when I was working with the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center and trying to get the minimum wage increased in Pennsylvania, trying to get equitable funding for public schools here in Pennsylvania, working on these issues, I couldn't get any of that to move, because we had a state legislature in Harrisburg that had no interest in raising the minimum wage, had no interest in fairly funding public schools. And so it came to be that we had to increase the amount of people who were actually voting. That's the only way we're going to get change. We had to change what the electorate looks like, and we have to change what Harrisburg looked like. And thankfully, here in 2022, we had a lot of folks come out in record numbers in particular counties and cast a ballot to make change. And here we are in this current day where we might actually have our first Black woman Speaker of the House in Pennsylvania, and State Representative Joanna McClinton. Change comes when we vote. We are powerful. And our voices need to be heard, and they need to be heard at the ballot box, because that's how we're going to bring about change in this moment.
Wow. Do you think a lot of the Black and brown community think that their vote doesn't count?
Yeah, as we travel the state of Pennsylvania and we talk to folks who have cast ballots previously or have never cast a ballot, one of the top two reasons people say that they don't want to get registered to vote or why they're not voted is because they don't believe their vote counts. I've heard it time and time again. People say, whatever's going to be is going to be. You see what's happening right now with District Attorney Larry Krasner and them trying to, take away the will of the voters. In two separate elections, Philadelphians voted for Larry Krasner, but you have elected officials who sit in Harrisburg, whose home districts are in the center of the state or in the far west corners of the state, and they're trying to impeach a duly elected official. And so these are the political theatrics that the electorate is not interested in and what keeps them out of it. And so when they say, you know, what's going to be, what's going to be, I mean, if we've cast a ballot two times for our district attorney and all of a sudden you want to impeach and then also remove him from office, then you are not counting the votes of people. You are not counting the will of the people who duly elected that man two times. So there is good cause for people to be concerned about the electoral process and if their votes are truly counting. Now, let's not get this confused. We know that we are having free and fair elections here in Pennsylvania and across the county and across the country. So that's not a concern. We are having free and fair elections. What we are not having is good conversations with those who have decided to remain out of the electorate. And so it's been up to a lot of grassroots organizations such as ours and others who are doing this work to have one-on-one conversations with people to get them to join the electorate, to realize that their power comes in their vote. You know, you see behind me, I have John Lewis behind my back here. And so we know that we must cast a ballot and cast a ballot twice a year here in the in Pennsylvania, in the Commonwealth. We vote every 6 months and every single election matters. So yes, we just got done with this, with the sexy 2022 election. And next year, 2023, we're going to have elections for the mayor of Philadelphia. We're going to have elections for judicial candidates, for judges, you know, for parliamentarians and for other positions. People don't even know what these folks do, but we're expecting them to cast a ballot. And so it's really, it's a failure, an institutional failure, on the part of so many that we have an electorate that's just not engaged. And it's no fault of their own, truly. It's that we have taken civics out of schools for the most part. And we are not having, you know, really important conversations with people who need to have them and talk about what it is that they would like to see change so that they will feel as though their vote matters, that they will feel that if they vote in every single election, that their needs will begin to get met. That is the number one reason people don't cast a ballot. They just don't feel that the electoral system is working for them, elected officials are working for them, and that their needs are being met.
So, you know, just to kind of piggyback off of what you said, you know, Philadelphia is gearing up to elect its next mayor in the 2023 mayoral election, you know, and this is amid some major issues that are going on in the city with gun violence and so many different things. And we have approximately like 8 candidates who have thrown their hat in the ring, with some others, you know, rumored to be potentially entering the campaign. But what are, or what would you say are some of the characteristics that the mayoral elect needs to have, and some of the issues that the mayoral elect needs to address?
Yeah, you know, the 2023 mayoral election in Philadelphia is going to be very important. It's going to drive turnout. Hopefully it's going to be record turnout in Philadelphia for people to come out and cast a ballot. I think it's really important for anyone who in this moment thinks that they want to be the mayor of Philadelphia, that they, number one, be a public servant, mm-hmm. that they're in this to help people, that they're in this to solve problems. They're in here to move things that are going to help Philadelphians. So I think that the number one thing we're looking for right now in a mayoral candidate is a public servant, someone is who is in this for the right reason, someone who wants to bring about change, who wants to solve problems in the city of Philadelphia. This is a first-class city, stuck at a minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. You know, you look at other first-class cities across this country, and they are up to $15 and beyond. And yes, there has been some things that can be done in the city, you know, legislature to increase minimum wage. And that has been done for city workers. And a lot of this hangs about what's happening in Harrisburg. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, what it is that a mayor can actually do. If we have folks who, I'll bring this back up again, you know, trying to impeach Larry Krasner. Well, if you really want to bring about change, if you want to end gun violence, in Philadelphia, do the things that are going to end gun violence in Philadelphia, such as raise the minimum wage to give people a reason to want to get out of bed every morning and hit the street for 40 hours in a week to make a living wage. Raise the minimum wage. You want to bring about the end of gun violence in Philadelphia? Make sure that we are fully and equitably funding our public schools, and that a school on one side of City Line Avenue doesn't look like a school on the other side of City Line Avenue. So if you're really trying to fund, if you're really trying to end gun violence, do the things that are going to really help that. Let's have some housing that is affordable in Philadelphia. You know, let's have a legal system that works for everybody in Philadelphia. So I think that we just need some public servants in office who really want to do the right thing for the right reasons.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. That was very well said and profound. But, you know, you're out here and you're in the streets, you're going knocking on doors, you know, you're doing the hard work and you're speaking to diverse communities, the Latinos, the African-American communities and the Asian communities. So what are some of the biggest concerns that the minorities you've encountered during your advocacy work that they're voicing? Because as Philadelphia begins to elect its the next mayor, a lot of people are wanting to hear from the people. And what is it that they're saying that they want done? Because, you know, like you've said, they're the voiceless, you know, they're kind of always overlooked. You have those that were formerly incarcerated, and a lot of times their voice isn't heard because of where they've been. So what would you say are some of the biggest issues that they voice their opinion about?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, Pennsylvania is a very diverse state, right? And so 67 counties, we have rural, urban, ex-urban, suburban, you know, Pennsylvania. And I can tell you that the conversations we're having at the doors, the conversations we're having at festivals and tabling events and community engagement events are very similar. You know, the issues that they're concerned about in more rural areas of Pennsylvania are some of the same issues that urban Pennsylvania cares about, right? It's still the same pocketbook issues, right? It's putting food on the table for our kids, making sure that they have equitably funded schools, that we have advanced, you know, education beyond high school, if it's technical school, if it's community college, if it's a four-year college that's affordable, that we're not leaving people in student loan debt. You know, I think that there is concerns, particularly depending upon where you are, environmental issues, are concerned as well, particularly in the youth community, really concerned about the environment that we are leaving for future generations. But it's the pocketbook issues, you know, no matter where we are, if it is Allegheny County, if it is Sitter County, if it is Dauphin County, if it is Philadelphia County or the suburbs, they really want to make sure that, you know, that they can live a, you know, a prosperous life. They're not asking for a lot. We just want to get our needs met so that we can continue to live a prosperous life. And so I think that that is what is the takeaway, is that no matter where we are in Pennsylvania, it's the similar issues that are really concerning. Now, you know, yeah, in rural areas, you're going to have some broadband issues. In some of these urban areas, you're going to have some environmental issues that are at the forefront. But they're very similar. You know, I just got back from Georgia. I was down in Georgia for the runoff race, Warnock and Walker. And I had my team down there for 2 weeks, and we were in Savannah, Georgia. And some days we were in mid-city. Some days we were down, we were in West Savannah, which is probably very similar to like the city of Chester. And then some days we were in the swamps of Savannah, Georgia. And the issues were still the same. Right. The issues are the same down in Georgia that they're here in Pennsylvania. Just people wanting to live a prosperous life, make a good living wage, take care of their families, have schools in which their kids are going to get an excellent education, not just a fair education, but an excellent education. And, you know, and just do the thing. That's what they're looking to. That's what Americans are looking for in this moment. And just really grateful we were actually able to get down to Georgia and spend some time down there with the New Georgia Project. They ran a tremendous program. They knocked on 800,000 doors in 3 weeks. Wow. 800,000 doors. Now, you saw how close that election night was, right? It was 50-50 for most of the night until Fulton County came through, where Atlanta is, right? And you think every single vote matters. So you figure if they didn't knock on those 800,000 doors, how different the outcome of that election could have been. So, you know, I take that away from my time down there in Georgia, you know, bringing that here to Pennsylvania. We registered 20,000 Pennsylvanians to vote as an organization this year, 20,000 Pennsylvanians. And, you know, we knocked on their doors. Or get out the vote the 2 weeks ahead of the election. We knocked on the doors of those we actually registered to vote so they could see our faces one more time, where we could say, we registered you to vote. We overcame all the obstacles we overcame, your concerns about registering to vote and why you've never been registered to vote or haven't you voted in 14 years. And here we are back at your door again because there's an election in 2 weeks and we want you to come out and vote your values. And so every single vote matters. They all count. We are having free and fair elections here in Pennsylvania, and we need to continue to vote to ensure we do have free and fair elections here in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome, because it's more through your work, it seems like you're developing and building and establishing relationships with these voters versus just like, oh, you knock on the door, here, we'll sign you up, go register to vote, and you never see them again. But it's like, you know, just showing them that, you know, their vote does count. You know, hey, we came back and, you know, we're coming to see you again and you know, after the results of the election.
Building that connection.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You know, it's not a transaction here, right? It's not a one-way transaction. We're not just here mm-hmm. trying to get you registered to vote and walking away. We're staying engaged. So everyone mm-hmm. that we registered to vote, we have stayed engaged with them. We have met them where they are. If that was Facebook or TikTok or Twitter, if that was by email, if that was by a text message or a phone call or mail in, you know, in their mailbox. Mm-hmm. We have stayed engaged with the people we registered to vote. And I can tell you one of the most proud moments we had over this last electoral cycle was someone we had registered to vote. We hand out stickers to say I'm registered to vote after we get somebody registered to vote. Mm-hmm. And we knocked on this person's home and they had the sticker on their front door of their home, nice. The sticker that we had handed them when we registered them to vote. And so we know how serious this is. And we know that this cannot be a transaction. This has to be a relationship. And mm-hmm. as we are out here and we are getting someone to get registered to vote for the first time in their life, or maybe the first time in more than a decade, we need to stay engaged with them, because the most recently registered to vote are actually the least likely to show up to the polls. Mm-hmm. And so there's extra work that has to be done. You know, another takeaway from 2022, we registered two 100-year-old women to vote. Mm-hmm.
Two oh my gosh.
100-year-old women to vote. And one of the women, when asked, you know, why has she remained out of the electorate all her life here? She's had 82 years. She could have been voting. Mm. And she said, no one ever asked me. No one ever asked me to register to vote. Mm. And so we can never take that for granted. A lot of us, we live in our bubbles, and we're, you know, we have our friends who are politically engaged and, you know, really pay attention to what's going on. You know, when someone is working 2 and 3 shift jobs and making $7.25 an hour, they don't have time mm-hmm. to have CNN on and MSNBC mm-hmm. and pay attention to what's happening. And so we really need to make sure that we are back here civically engaging Pennsylvanians, because they've been neglected. They've been neglected by either political parties or by the system itself. And so we need to make sure that we are talking to them and getting them re-energized and joining the electorate. Mm-hmm. One of the things we say a lot, you know, when we're knocking on doors in Harrisburg or in the city of Chester, you know, we'll say that, you know, we'll go to a block and we have an idea that entire block is not registered to vote. And so when we get on that block and we start knocking on all the doors on that block, we say, this is why, you know, the issues you're experiencing, why you're experiencing these issues, because this block is not voting. Elected officials don't care about you because you're not voting them in and you're not voting them out. So unless this entire block wants to get registered to vote and come out and start voting consistently and in record numbers, things will not change on this block. This entire block needs to be politically engaged so the elected officials fear you and mm-hmm. fear your vote. And so this is something we talk about all the time when we're engaging Pennsylvanians, wherever they may be.
Wow. Kadita, I have a question. So with New York and New Jersey legalizing marijuana, what are your thoughts on for Pennsylvania? Do you think they're ready? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it all depends on what the state legislature looks like, right? So we have the opportunity this last election, the Pennsylvania House flipped from Republican control to Democratic control. Mm-hmm. Very narrow majority, 102 to 101 is the difference, right? And so in the past, we haven't had a legislature that was interested in lifting that legislation up, marijuana legislation up. And so if you have a political party who controls what bills get heard out and get brought out of committee, would get brought to the House floor to be voted on by everyone, that's how you make change happen. And so right now, the Senate, the Pennsylvania Senate, is still controlled by Republicans who have no interest and legalizing marijuana. I know that this was something that at the time, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman was working on. This is not something that can, you know, truly be a constitutional amendment change where the voters get to vote on this by referendum. I mean, it's different for cities and different municipalities who can regulate. But in a statewide effort to legalize marijuana, that's going to come from the state legislature, and that's going to be cycles of Pennsylvanians saying, let me change who my legislators are. Let me make sure that I am voting for legislators who will legalize marijuana and bring home all the folks who have been incarcerated for marijuana sales. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, this is something that can be done through voting. This is why voting is so important. And anytime someone says to me, you know, why my one vote doesn't matter, there's a reason why, you know, John Lewis behind me worked so hard and others to get everyone registered to vote and voting. There is, you know, there is power in our vote. And if there was not, they would not try so hard to disenfranchise us in so many ways.
Yes. Wow. So voter suppression. I know Pennsylvania may not see as much voter suppression legislation like maybe Georgia, but are you seeing any in Pennsylvania? And if so, what is it? Because why, you know, should it be important that voters understand, you know, what voter suppression is, what laws that they're trying to create to suppress the vote?
Absolutely. You know, we're not Georgia, we're not Mississippi, we're not Alabama, but Pennsylvania, sometimes I like to refer to us as the most northern southern state. We have, you know, there's opportunity. We have lots of opportunities here as well. You know, where we are more progressive here in the Commonwealth, for instance, we allow those who are formerly incarcerated to become registered to vote the moment their feet hit the street. So if you are formerly incarcerated in Pennsylvania, and your felony or your misdemeanor had nothing to do with a violation of election law, you are eligible to vote here in the Commonwealth. I think that that's really important for people to recognize. I think it's also really important to recognize the youth. You know, if you are not 18 yet, but you will be 18 on election day, you can get registered to vote. Voter suppression here in Pennsylvania happens behind closed doors. It happens when you have legislators who are trying to put forward more restrictive barriers to cast ballots, such as the voter ID laws. I go back again to, you know, 100-year-old Black women here in Pennsylvania. I think about Miss Vivette Applewhite, who voted for every single president since FDR. But in 2012, there was plans for Republicans had put out plans to instill a more restrictive voter ID law. Now, if you are a 100-year-old Black woman in this country, more than likely you are not driving. Right. I don't know a lot of 101-year-olds who are out here driving. So you don't have a driver's license. You're not standing in the line at DMV for a couple hours. You're most likely not going to jump online and try to navigate the online system. You are also most likely not born in a hospital and therefore don't have a birth certificate. So there are various ways in which votes can be suppressed if we put restrictive barriers in front of voters. Yeah, voter ID is probably popular, and a lot of folks have softened on it, such as Stacey Abrams, the incoming attorney general, I believe, is going to also soften on voter ID. Well, if we're going to require that everyone have an ID to cast a ballot, then we need to make sure that it can be delivered to their home and meet them where they are, and it be free and accessible to them, if that is what we're going to do. But there are restrictions that Pennsylvania puts out there that stops someone from voting. Let's just think about the fact that we just got the mail-in voting out of 2019, right before the pandemic. If it wasn't for the change in Act 77, which allowed us to vote by mail, imagine how that 2020 election would have looked with all of us stuck in our homes and not able to get out to the polls safely. Mm. So there's ways in which Pennsylvania can restrict and put barriers in front of voters, Black, brown, and others, young and old. And so, let's not just think that vote suppression is just a Southern thing, because it definitely happens up north, too.
Wow. You cooking with grease. See, this is why I love my sister. She holds it down. You're listening to We Talk Weekly's After the Talk on WPPM LP Philadelphia, 106.5 FM. We Talk Weekly's After the Talk. I have a couple more questions for you. I know we had you and we're taking up your time. But I just want to. What do you think, because you brought up Stacey Abrams, what do you think happened with that? You know, she's been running and she's been putting in the work. Where do you think her her campaigning or her support fell short? I'm very curious with that.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to always give Stacey Abrams her flowers. If it was not for Stacey Abrams, Georgia would not be at 95% voter registration rate. I mean, they registered hundreds of thousands of Georgians in less than a decade. So I'm going to always give her her flowers. I think that in this last election, and what we heard, because we were out there knocking on doors in Georgia ourselves, Pennsylvanians down there in Georgia knocking on doors. And what we heard from some who we encountered, you know, we were there for the Warnock-Walker runoff, but they wanted to talk to us about the previous election that happened in November. You know, some thought that maybe she had stepped away from the issues that were really important to Black folks, that she was, you know, as Democrats do, they have a wide tent. They have a big tent, and they're trying to include everybody. And I think that some Black folks down south felt as though that she had been leaving their issues out and not recognizing them as much as she was recognizing other issues. That's something we had heard from others. I think the other thing too is we can't forget, you know, she's a Black woman. She's a Black woman. And, you know, she would have been the first Black woman governor in this country, you know, and 300 plus years of history. So, you know, it was always going to be an uphill challenge, uphill battle for her to be elected to be governor of a southern state. And let's also not get it confused who was registered to vote in Georgia and who is voting for the governors in Georgia. So, you know, I think that I can't say too much besides the fact that I'm going to give Stacey Abrams her flowers. She ensured that Warnock became senator multiple times. I think that Georgia just wasn't ready. One day, hopefully they will be ready.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up, you know, because there has been some conversation surrounding Black men and issues that they believe that are not getting addressed. And I'm curious if you heard that down there and, you know, what is it about this dichotomy of, you know, Black women, Black men, and then other groups, and how can we start to, I guess, bridge those gaps so Black men can feel like, well, hey, there is something. They are people in leadership that's looking out for Black men and listening to the things or the issues that affect us.
Yeah, you know, I'll say this. Oftentimes people will say, oh, you know, Black men didn't come out and vote for Stacey Abrams. That's why she wasn't elected, or, you know, her percentage wasn't as high as Black women. Let's not get this confused. The overwhelming majority of Black women and Black men voted for Stacey Abrams in this last election, period. Right. So we know Black women have been saving democracy for so long. I think the records, the turnout numbers are going to show something like 94-95% of Black women voted for the Democratic Party in this last election. And I think that, you know, there is something to say about, you know, the divide between Black women and Black men. Yeah. I think that we cannot forget that misogyny is not just a thing that you can put on white folks. Black men can be misogynist as well and not want to see a woman in a position of power. There's also something to be said for Stacey Abrams perhaps not addressing the concerns of Black men as much as she possibly could have. So I don't know if that's on the candidate, if that's just on the current climate we're in, or if that's just, something for us to recognize for the future and any potential candidate coming along. Kamala Harris, you know, had the same situations happen to her during her tenure and her race for the vice presidency, and when she was running to be the president at that time in the primary election. How folks felt about her as well. So, you know, there's something to be said about misogyny that exists in communities, no matter what community you belong to. Something to be said for candidates to really address concerns of Black men. I think that's really important. We talk about having a representative democracy. We want to see ourselves represented in government. We want to see ourselves on the bench. We want to see ourselves holding office. And I think it's just something that we'll have to talk about and really have some community conversations about. Let's have some forums. Let's have some dialogue about what it is, because Black men, you know, have been still solid Democratic voters. You're going to see turnout numbers. We're going to show that at least 85% of all Black men voted for the Democratic Party in these last elections. But there's going to be work to do because the number was greater for Black women. But yeah, so work to be done, conversations to be had. And I think that we need to be really open and honest about the needs that need to be addressed. And so if you feel as though your needs are not being addressed by elected officials, we need to be in the room when these conversations are happening. And we need to be sitting at the tables and we need to be having these conversations.
Yeah, I appreciate you for saying that. And I think that all groups within, I guess, the context of Black men and Black women, there needs to be some type of discourse there to start bringing these people, bringing us together and say, hey, we're in this thing together. And so we have to try to find some like interests that that affects both of us that we can push toward without the infighting. And it's starting to show and I'm starting to see a lot of that. Before I let you leave, I have to ask you one more question. And again, before I let you leave, I just got to give you your flowers for fighting a good fight. And, you know, to hear, because pretty much that's what you're doing is a historic movement. There has been people doing like jobs or like interests, but you're really making a movement and you're doing some fantastic things. And I want to give you your flowers for that because you've been here and I've seen your progression and I see the work that you have been doing. And that's something to be acknowledged because Black folks sometimes just don't know. And if they don't know, they can't fix it. Right. And you're a source because we're a solutions oriented media outlet, right? And so we try to find solutions, and you have been finding those solutions, putting those two pieces together and fixing those issues, right? And so I just want to just say thank you for that. Thank you for the people for that, and you deserve to be acknowledged for that. So that's to you, and I love you, my sister. But last question I have, and you don't have to necessarily say who would you endorse, right? Because I have to get this out of you because we're going into this mayoral election. And I think this is probably the first time in history where it has been so many people that from city council even to run for mayoral position, right? Who would be your top three that you would look out to or you've seen that you have some interest to see what they're doing because you have seen them doing work? You don't have to say who you endorse because I don't want to put you on a spot like that. But I do want you to tell me who do you think has been putting in the work that you would look to as it relates to this mayoral race.
Okay, you're really trying to get me in trouble here.
That's why I didn't want to see. And that's why I didn't want to say give me one. But I just kind of want you to say some of the people that you think are doing some great things in the community. We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, right now we know that there is an entrepreneur. Right. We have a grocery store owner who's interested. We know we have several council members interested. We know we have a former judge interested. There's a lot of folks who are interested in being the mayor of Philadelphia, and it's going to come down to, again, who is going to be the public servant, who has been the public servant these last many years, right? As they've been serving either on city council, as they've been serving their communities as an entrepreneur, as they've been on the bench, dispersing justice on folks. So, you know, I'm going to look for someone who has recognized the importance of making sure that we have fair housing in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. someone who has been working towards increasing the minimum wage, someone who's mm-hmm. been working on talking about gun violence and how we overcome those issues with solutions, right? And not just the blame game.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to say any names out here tonight. You're not going to get that out of me tonight, but I will say, you know, I'm not a politician, but I'm playing one right now.
I know. I can see you killing it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm going to say that, you know, there has been folks who have supported our organization and the work mm-hmm. that we are doing. Council members, at least two of the council women who are running, have recognized our work as an organization and have assisted us in making sure we're getting folks registered to vote. I don't live in Philadelphia. I'm out here in the suburbs of Philadelphia. So I'm going to throw that one out there, too, to save myself. So I won't be casting a ballot in Philadelphia, but I'm definitely going to be in Philadelphia. Our organization will be in Philadelphia in 2023 registering voters. We stayed out of Philadelphia in 2022 for the most part. We just concentrated on the Collar counties, the suburbs of Philadelphia, Allegheny, Harrisburg region, Poconos region. We're going to be in Philadelphia in 2023. We're going to register probably 10,000 Pennsylvania Philadelphians to vote in 2023. And we're going to leave it up to the voters to decide. We're going to talk about the issues that matter to them. They're going to get to see the platform of these folks who are running for office, and they're going to make the determination about who it is they believe will be best suited. And here's the thing that people need to hear from me tonight who are listening in. The primary election in Philadelphia is the election, right? Because mm-hmm. there are so many Democrats That's in the right. city of Philadelphia that you have to come out in the primary and cast a ballot for who you want to be the mayor, because most mm-hmm. likely whoever the Democratic candidate is out of the primary will be the mayor of Philadelphia. Right. So when we have this election this spring coming up, right, you're going to have to vote in that primary election for who you want to be the mayor of Philadelphia. That's how this works, mm-hmm. Particularly when you have a city that is really Democratic.
Mm-hmm. Somebody has some media training. Yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your boy, Charles Gregory, with the beautiful
Lawrence
and the beautiful
Classy Lady Sparkle
and the beautiful
Lady Estat.
This is We Talk Weekly's After the Talk on WPPMLP Philadelphia 106.5 FM. We Talk Weekly's After the Talk. Khadida, why don't you tell everyone how they can get in contact with you, see your work, follow you, help you out, assist, all that good old stuff.
Absolutely. Please visit us at our website, newpaproject.org. We are hiring. If you're looking to do this work and receive good pay and benefits and do some work that you love, that's going to bring about change, we are hiring in this moment. You can see us on all the social media channels at New Pennsylvania, on Twitter at New PA Project, on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. We're all over the place. And feel free to reach out in the various ways in which you can to help us. And if you like the work that we're doing, feel free to make the donation. It's the end of the year, tax time. Mm-hmm. You can make a tax deductible contribution to our C3 organization, the New PA Project Education Fund. Maybe help you out a little bit on your taxes this year if you have some money to give. But let's all just get engaged. There are people in your life in this moment who are not registered to vote. Have a conversation with them. Get them registered. You have 17 and 18-year-olds in your life who are not registered to vote, but will be eligible in time for the May primary. Get them registered to vote. It's going to take all of us to overcome what is happening here in this country right now. And it can't just be Black women out here. It's got to be everybody.
Y'all heard that, gentlemen, right? And they're going to start to make sure that everybody feels included, gentlemen. So don't feel like you're not included in this fight. The good fight. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my friend. I mean, we go back like Boston Baked Beans and Mike and Ike's, man, and she's doing some fantastic work.
Got the temple out. You see the temple
out?
T.U. See it right there.
There you see it, right? There you go. And she's been fighting since T.U. We fighters. The owls are everywhere. And we'll be in contact. We'll be in touch, and especially when you start to do We're going to talk a little, because you need to be in somebody's chair or something. You need to be doing something like that. You need a bigger leadership position, because what you're doing, I mean, literally, we talked about jobs, right? She's hiring. She's giving people jobs, and it's better than minimum wage, right?
Yes,
so you're talking about finding more solutions that you're already doing. And so make sure you reach out to her, and we'll be in touch. And I appreciate you, and you keep hope and keep the fight alive, my sister. You take care.
Thank you, y'all. Thank you for the service that you provide.
Absolutely. We love you, girl. Thank you. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You're talking about somebody, Miss Khadida, somebody who's really putting in the work, and we appreciate this sister. She's been on the show a couple times already, and every time she's pushing, mm-hmm. she's doing some great work, and we appreciate her. So without further ado, man, we got another interview coming on right after this. I don't want your guys to go anywhere. When we come back, we got a gentleman. You know what? He's doing some great things in the community, and you heard Khadida talk about even the youth. Mm-hmm. That's important. Mm-hmm. That's a voter block that I believe always get talked over, right? And I think one thing that We Talk Weekly has been having this conversation around is these different voter blocks, right? Mm-hmm. And with these voting blocks, when they're listening to the news and they're listening to these platforms, oftentimes, you know, they feel that they're being talked at, not talked to. And so they could pontificate and give you these academic conversations. You go to CNN and they talk about all these terms, and people listening, like one of the the biggest voter blocks out there is not even college educated. And so when you're having these conversations, they like, what are these people talking about? You know what? I'm just going to vote for this person because she's black at this point. Or I'm going to vote for him because he's black or he looks like me. Right. Without even understanding the terms. I'm not even going to get into those other questions that they put in the polls. Right. Oh, people like, what is this? Mm-hmm. You know, well, I guess I'll just eeny, meeny, miny, mo it. Right. And there needs to be conversation based around what are the best answers? How do I even answer this? How do I even understand what's being asked of me? And so we have to do better. And I think Khadida is doing that job. She's really talking to people and getting them out there. That those 200-year-old, you know, that's amazing. That's amazing, you know. And again, that's something that need to be acknowledged.
I hope they got that on video.
I know we got it on video. I'm gonna reach out. I'm gonna reach out to her, ask her if they got that. But that's amazing, and that's great work. And we need to continue to amplify those stories and stop talking about Kanye. I'm tired of Kanye. Right? Let's talk about stuff that really matters, like this.
Trying to run.
Yeah. How about that? Who cares? Right? And so, don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after this. Hello.